This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Welcome to the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 2 and 3 o'clock. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be talking all things Nottingham Forest, a pretty chastening 4-0 defeat at home against Sheffield Wednesday. How do they bounce back to winning style? We'll also be talking about Swansea City. After a poor run, they are now back to winning ways. Also talking about Blackburn, unbeaten in 6 matches and an impressive result at Bristol City, who we'll also be talking about out of the top 6 and playoff positions. Where is their season heading? Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. This is the Championship Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty to talk about over the next hour. That number again, 0208 7020 558. If you want to share your views on your championship club. Obviously, plenty to talk about over the next hour. We are going to be talking about Swansea, Blackburn and Bristol City. So fans of those clubs, make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. But first, we're going to be starting on Nottingham Forest. A pretty poor afternoon for them last weekend, losing 4-0 at home against Sheffield Wednesday, conceding all 4 of those goals in the first half to a player that hadn't scored in 20 months. But not really good, particularly for Nottingham Forest. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Baz Cooper, journalist at the Nottingham Post. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Baz. As I said, a pretty chastening experience for Nottingham Forest fans. I'm sure even against the side in Sheffield Wednesday, who are a good side, I'm assuming that no Forest fan expected to see that on Saturday.
Good afternoon. No, not at all. I think that's a fair assumption. Although, in teams like Millwall, Sheffield Wednesday and also Cardiff, Forest don't have great records against those sides. So probably to those supporters that watch Forest with some degree of regularity, it didn't come as a massive surprise. Probably what did come as a surprise was the way in which Sabri Lamouchi's Forest capitulated in that first half. One of the key bedrocks, if you like, of Lamouchi and of Forest under Lamouchi, I should say, has been the defensive solidity they have, and there was none of that evident on Saturday at the City Ground. They were just terrible from start to finish, from the first minute right through to half time. They were garbage.
Looking at the form recently, Forest have lost 2, drawn 2 of their last 4 games. Does that result in particular on Saturday just show how ridiculously crazy inconsistent everyone is? That Forest are now out of the top 6, but I mean, you wouldn't be surprised if Forest go and win this weekend very, very comfortably. That's just the nature of it, and there are very few sides in this league that actually can get any sort of good run going.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assumption. We've been saying for quite a while now that you kind of feel that West Brom are the team to beat. They have probably the best manager in the division in Slaven Bilic. They probably have, certainly for me, they have the best squad in the division, and also they have the best individuals within that squad, and Bilic has got them playing well. So I always kind of felt that West Brom were going to be the team that would need catching. I think Leeds have surprised me to a degree. I wasn't convinced that they'd be able to go again this year, even under somebody like Marcelo Bielsa. But everybody else is bang out. They're bang average. That's the sum total of it, I think. The league is the poorest it's been for a long time. And you know, while Forest have done well this season under Lamouchi, we all know that, and we've all seen that week in, week out. But there's still holes within their game, as they were exploited against Cardiff, as they were well and truly exploited against Sheffield Wednesday last weekend. So I think it does go to show just how competitive the division is. And if you're not at it, if you're not on it on any given day, you can get an absolute pasting. And you can get a pasting from one of the better teams in the league. Let's not, you know, Wednesday have had their difficulties, the transition from their previous manager to Steve Bruce, Josh however you pronounce his name, I do apologise for that. But and then to Gary Monk, so they've struggled to, they found that difficult, but they've still got good players. Jordan Rhodes is a you know is a is a expensive Championship striker. Yes, he's not scoring in 20 months, and that's the headline, but he's still a fine player at this level and will always score goals. And Stephen Fletcher, Barry Bannon, Adam Reach, they've got good players throughout their side. So it's not a massive surprise to see, you know, to see Forest come up against some difficulties. But again, like you say, Huddersfield this weekend, they've had a difficult season. Then they've had a bit of a revival under the Cowley brothers, and then they've had one or two difficult results again since. So you just can't predict it, can you?
When you look back at last weekend's game, Baz, do you think, my goodness, this is a worrying sign, conceding four in the first half of that game? Or do you just put it down as one of those sort of anomalies, that it was just a day where everything that could go wrong did go wrong, and therefore, even though it was an awful day and you conceded four at home inside the opening 45 minutes, it's one that you can just park, put it to one side and move on from?
No, I don't think it is. I don't think you can just move on from it. I think, you know, there are results within a season where you can go, "Fuck, crikey, yeah, that was just one of those days," you know, in retrospect. But I don't think the Wednesday game is. I think, you know, there's been one or two instances recently where we've raised concerns about Forest. Certainly Forest at home, maybe Forest away are a different proposition, because that's the way they're set up. They're set up to play on the counter-attack, and playing away from the City Ground, maybe with a bit less scrutiny, a bit less pressure, maybe a bit less expectation, might work in their favour. At the City Ground, there's been, you know, they've only scored more than two on one occasion in the league. They put three past Birmingham, beating them 3-0 quite early on in the campaign. Yes, they put three past Derby, but that was a very different game in the League Cup. They're struggling to score goals at home, and to be quite honest with you, they don't look like scoring goals at home. We talked about it, about the Cardiff game previously on this show, I think, and the fact that they had 32 shots a goal. But that sounds a lot, and I guess it is a lot in quantity, but when you actually drill down and look closer, how close were they to scoring with those shots? Well, the answer is not very. How many saves did the goalkeeper make? Two, one in each half, and neither of those were particularly challenging saves for the goalkeeper. And again, against Sheffield Wednesday, they had a couple of half chances in the first half, and obviously one or two chances in the second half, where Wednesday have, you know, shut up shop and are just waiting to get on the bus home because the game's long but over. But so scoring goals at home is a big worry for them. They can't seem to get Lewis Grabbing involved in a game. He scored 10 goals this year, of which 8 have come away from the City Ground, so that tells you a lot. And they're struggling to get Joe Lolley in form. They can't seem to settle. Lamucci can't seem to settle on the number 10, whether that be Carvalho playing in the 10 or playing off the left or right side, whether it be Thiago Silva playing in that role. So, you know, there are, look, we shouldn't get too down. They've had a great start to the season, but I think this, maybe they're starting to, the teams are starting to suss them out and starting to say, well, hang on a minute, if we don't play too high and we don't get caught on the counter attack and we keep Joe Lolley out of the game, maybe double up on him when he's got the ball coming off the right, then we've got a chance of stopping Forest. So it's up to Lucci and his players to, you know, to counteract that and try and come up with an answer, because the, you know, otherwise these situations can, as we know, can quickly get past you.
Was there a real frustration from Forest fans on the weekend, Baz, that obviously that first half was terrible, but there didn't seem to be a massive reaction? Obviously, even if Forest had
there was a huge half time. There was I can't remember the last time I heard a reaction as strong as what
is in from the players, Baz, rather than the fans.
Oh, right, from the players. Yeah, well, not really. I think, you know, I guess it's one of those where they probably want a game. They probably wanted a game midweek, maybe, to get it out of the system. But, you know, playing away from home, they've got the next two games are away on Huddersfield on Saturday and on Boxing Day at Hull City. Two games that, realistically, they've got to be looking at getting, you know, a minimum, I think, of 4 points from, given their recent form. So it's up to the players to react, isn't it? Lamucci was very, very... I mean, it sounds daft to say that Lamucci is a bad loser who likes losing, let's be frank. But he was very, very short with the media after the game on Saturday, pretty, in the sense he literally just came out, spoke to the local media, answered one question for 3 minutes, and then said thank you very much and went straight back and didn't take any further questions. And that's unlike the manager, but it also gives an insight into just how angry, how frustrated he was with that performance, the fact he didn't make any substitutions in the entire 90 minutes. That, again, is a look, you've got us into this mess. I'm going to leave you hanging, but it's up to you to get us out of it. and take the brunt of the supporters' frustration. So it wouldn't be a big surprise if at Huddersfield on Saturday he named the same side and said, right, you know, go out there and put it right, if you like.
You mentioned that next game, Baz. It's away at Huddersfield this coming Saturday. Their form has dipped. It looked like it was taking having a real bounce since Danny Cowley had taken over. They've gone through a slight dip in form. You said there, these next two away games, maybe the recent form has maybe heaped on a bit more pressure to get more points than maybe you'd have been looking at maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I think so. But I think I'm loath to keep using cliches, but this is the Championship. Every game is rock solid. You know, you looked at the opening. We were talking about this a while ago. But you look at the opening run of fixtures at the start of the season. You think, blimey, now that's a tough run. You've got the likes of Birmingham away at Swansea, away at Leeds, away at Fulham, and Brentford at home, who were no pushovers and one of the better sides in the division. And you think, cracky, that's a really tough start. So then Forest go on a good run. They win at Fulham. They win at Swansea. They get a battling point at Leeds in the first away game. Okay, it wasn't pretty, but they stuck in there and got something out of it. And they've backed up with wins over Brentford and a solid point against Preston, who were flying high at that point. And so, well, that's you know, the next run of games looks fairly easy. Blackburn, comparatively, that is. Blackburn, Wigan, Hull, all games that you'd expect Forest, given the start, to pick up points. And it didn't happen. And again, you look at this next run of fixtures up to the Chelsea game in the FA Cup at the start of January. Hull away, Huddersfield away, Blackburn at home, Wigan at home. You think, well, as four fixtures go, they're not, you know, you'd fancy your chances, wouldn't you? But this has often been Forest Achilles' heel. They Sheffield Wednesday side, obviously, but they can pick up good results. They play well against the better sides. Look at Leeds on New Year's Day last year. Trounce Leeds 4-2 at the City Ground and were absolutely brilliant. And then they go to Reading the following week after they've sacked the manager's departed, and they put in an absolutely terrible performance and get hammered at a very, very, very poor Reading side. So they just don't have any consistency, and that wasn't a problem at the start of the season. That issue is starting to rear its ugly head once again, that they haven't got that level of consistency that you need to be successful in the Championship. You think of the Millwall game. They were terrible in that first 45 minutes at the Den, 1-0, but only 1-0 down. Fight back, go 2-1 up, and then you should hold it. And they drop 2 points. You don't see West Brom, potentially don't see Leeds doing that. So these are the things that Forest have got to toughen up on. They've got to iron out if they're going to be successful this year.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Baz. That was Baz Cooper, a journalist at the Nottingham Post, talking about what was a pretty tough afternoon for Forest fans. 4-0 down at half-time. And as he mentioned there, Sabri Lamouchi keeping all 11 of the starting players out there for the whole game. Didn't make a single substitution, perhaps trying to make a point. But not a good experience for Forest fans. They are away at Huddersfield this coming Saturday. I'm sure Forest fans will be demanding a big response from their players. Just cutting away from the Championship just for a few moments' time. We brought you in the news in the last hour that Arsenal are looking to secure the appointment of Mikel Arteta, obviously a former player and former captain at the Gunners, and they're hoping to get that across the line. Maybe not tonight, because obviously City are involved in Carabao Cup action against Oxford United, but maybe before the weekend, before they play Everton. Well, the much respected and usually pretty spot on and reliable Gianluca Di Marzio, the Italian football journalist, at just before 2 o'clock tweeted, Arteta leaves Man City and will be next Arsenal manager. So usually one of Gianluca Di Marzio or Fabrizio Romano, usually one of those two are pretty reliable. So if you hear something like that from them, you can usually take it not with a pinch of salt. You can usually take it as a pretty reliable bit of information. So I think it's what we expected, but Gianluca Di Marzio confirming just before 2 o'clock that Arteta is going to leave Manchester City and will be the next Arsenal manager. Remember, if you want to get in touch, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We'll be back after this.
Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, make sure you do. Call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. We've already talked about Nottingham Forest. We're going to talk about Blackburn and Bristol City later in the hour. But we are going to be talking all things Swansea now. They're back to winning ways after winning against Middlesbrough by 3-1 last weekend. And delighted to say, we're joined by Tom Coleman, sports writer at Wales Online. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Tom. It has been a frustrating run for Swansea. It was looking a bit like Preston, very, very good about a month ago. Then a dip in form, which a lot of sides in the Championship experience, you're expecting at some point to go through a disappointing run. But back to winning ways, maybe not against the most difficult of opponents against Middlesbrough, but still, it must be good for Steve Cooper and his side to get back to winning ways.
Yeah, certainly was. I think they were certainly helped by Middlesbrough kind of shooting themselves in the foot a little bit, obviously with the two red cards, although I guess by the time the second red card came around, the game was already gone. But I think, yeah, like you said, I think the important thing was to get that result, to get back to winning ways. I don't think Cooper will be reading too much into the circumstances about how they got there. It's just all about that 3 points, really, and getting a bit of morale up and a bit of momentum heading into what, as everyone knows, is a very, very busy run of fixtures.
What would you put Swansea's poor form down to? Obviously, it's never just one reason, but you look at the four previous games to that win, draw, loss, loss, draw. So a definite slip in form. What would you say was the main reason as to why Swansea's form from the first 15 games of the season has dropped with the last five or six games?
I think, as you say, it's very, very difficult to put it down to one particular reason. One of the problems I've noticed in recent weeks has been perhaps a lack of sort of coherency in the centre of the park. There's been a few inconsistent performers recently, you know, the likes of Matt Grimes, George Byers, those sorts of players. You know, we know at their best they're more than capable of doing a job in this division. But, there's been times when, to be quite frank, they haven't really turned up. And, you know, I watched the game at West Brom last week, and midfield-wise, Swansea were all over the place. They gave a very, very good West Brom team, and admittedly a team that I think are probably quite well ahead of Swansea in terms of quality, but they just gave them far too much time, far too much space on the ball, made it too easy for them at times. And I think there's been several occasions where Swansea have almost been a bit bullied in the middle of the park. So I think that's, you know, kind of a sort of a key area that Cooper probably needs to look at. But as we mentioned at the beginning, much, much better on Saturday. And kept their heads. There was a mistake, obviously, for that Middlesbrough goal. I think it was Celina who gave the ball away a little bit too easily. So even then, there were a few sort of shaky... Well, there was a bit of shakiness in the centre of the park, but on the whole, it was a much more disciplined performance. And I think they're going to have to sort of capture that and make sure they can repeat it going forward.
Two goals at the weekend for Andre Ayew. He takes his tally up to 9 for the season. I think you know where this is heading. That talking about his future, and obviously we approach the January transfer window, and inevitably with a lot of players, there are links with clubs. He says he wants to help Swansea do something great, and is not thinking about speculation. How likely is it, considering he was seemingly destined for the exit door at Swansea last summer? How likely do you think it is that he will move on in January? Or is that out of the question, that it will be left until the summer and then you then make a decision then?
To be honest with you, Kieran, it's difficult to say either way. I think Ayew does seem to be focused on Swansea, and certainly Steve Cooper's sort of working on the assumption that he will still be here at the end of January. But he himself, Cooper's already admitted that, you know, if he continues to put in these types of performances, he is going to attract interest. Now, I mean, from what I understand, there's no sort of concrete interest in him at all at the moment. There were whispers of a possible link with Leeds United, but I understand there's nothing in that. But, you know, Ayew is such an important player to them, probably the most important player to Swansea, because he's a cut above anything else they have, really. And he's a player that you would think could still cut it out in the top flight. I think if I'm being honest, I think if Swansea do get what you would consider a big bid for him, I think they would have a very, very difficult decision to make. And I think even now, with Trevor Birch coming in and balancing the books, and he's done a terrific job on that front, by the way, but I think even now, there would be a temptation to perhaps cash in, especially if Cooper wants to bring in some new faces in January. You know, it's understanding that, you know, there's not going to be really any money to spend. Cooper's going to have to dip into the loan market. So if he wants anything more long-term in terms of transfer deals, then he's going to have to sell. And IU is probably the jewel in the crown at the moment.
If Swansea are looking at promotion this season, Tom, and to be honest, the top six places are all up for grabs in the Championship so far this season, do you think it's absolutely paramount, unless, as you mentioned, unless Swansea get blown out of the water with a fantastic offer that realistically they can't really think about refusing, do you think it would be a silly move, unless it is a ridiculously big offer, for Swansea to sell him halfway through the season?
Yeah, I think in terms of talk promotion, I think even with IU, I think Swansea still fall short for me. I think that, you know, they're still missing, you know, at least two or three genuinely good players. I mean, they're still in touching distance of the top six, so, you know, mathematically they're still well within a chance. And, you know, if they can put a run together, you never know. This is a mad division, but, you know, from what I've seen of them this season, and, you know, the gap between them and the top, it was emphasised when they were at West Brom last weekend, and yeah, for me they seem to be miles off. So I think, you know, it's not just promotion for me. I think in terms of sort of staying, you know, even within touching distance of the top six, they need to keep IU on board. And if IU does go, you know, it's difficult to see where a lot of that creativity and that threat's going to come from. I think it's 9 goals and 4 assists this season. That's a massive chunk of Swansea's goal-scoring outputs so far this season. So there's no question it would be a massive, massive blow to lose him. And I would suspect would probably end any sort of outside chances of promotion.
You mentioned there, Tom, about in January, potentially Steve Cooper's going to have to go into the loan market. Now, one of the players linked with a move from the Premier League to Swansea on loan is the young Liverpool striker Rian Brewster. Now, he's been linked with a number of different Championship clubs if he is to go on loan in January. And obviously, Swansea would have a good chance of signing him, because not only do they play a kind of a good style of football, so they look to get on the front foot, but obviously the relationship between Brewster and Steve Cooper. Obviously, Cooper was his manager at the under-17 level for England when they won the World Cup. So is that a genuine possibility you're hearing, that actually that relationship could prove to be vital in maybe securing a loan deal for Brewster in January?
Yes is the short answer. There is quite a bit of competition for him from what I understand, but Swansea, from what I've heard, have expressed a concrete interest in him. And you know, Cooper has made no secret in the past of the fact that he's an admirer of the player. I don't think he's going to get too drawn on much speculation in terms of being on the record now, but you know, he and Brewster have enjoyed a strong working relationship in the past. And you know, these sort of things can, I guess, place Swansea at the front of the queue. But it seems like there's a long, long way to go yet. I mean, one thing we do know is that Brewster will leave in January, and he will more than likely go to the Championship. And Swansea are one of those clubs to have expressed an interest. But I mean, as I said earlier, I mean, to be completely honest with you, I personally don't believe that Brewster is the sort of player they need right now. I think they need a bit more steel in midfield, but there's no doubting that the boy's got potential, and you know, I think, you know, if he can hit the ground running and score a few goals, he'd be a great signing for him. But as I said, still quite a long way to go in that one.
Matters on the field then, Tom. Next up for Swansea after the win against Middlesbrough last weekend, another side down in that part of the table. Swansea are away at Luton this weekend. How do you think? How do you view these types of games? Because there are two different ways of looking at these types of games. One is saying they're down in the dumps, they've lost a lot of games recently, they're in bad form, they're there to be had at this stage of the season. Or do you look at it and think they know they have to get out of form? Sorry, they have to get into form. They have to get out of the bad form that they're currently in, and actually it can then prove to be a more dangerous prospect?
It's a difficult question to answer that, really, because, I mean, you're talking about a Swansea team that has gone up to Elland Road and won and then lost at home to Stoke City. So, I mean, it's very, very difficult to answer that. I mean, I sort of get what you mean, but, I mean, Swansea aren't exactly in a rich run of form themselves. I mean, even despite that win over Borough at the weekend, I think it's still 4 wins out of 16 or something. So, you know, the form's still not great from a Swansea point of view. But in terms of earmarking winnable games, of course, you know, these are the sorts of games that I think they should be looking at. But, you know, as I've said time and time again, Kieran, when I've come on your show, I don't think Steve Cooper will necessarily see it that way. He's the sort of guy who likes to take games on a game-by-game basis. So, you know, I don't think he'll be sort of thinking too much about that sort of psychology. But, yeah, I think as a fan, you would look at that and think, you know, let's go there, let's build on Saturday and let's go out and get another 3 points.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Tom. That was Tom Coleman, a sports writer at Wales Online, talking about a few transfer lines. It's inevitable that we get to the middle of December and we're already talking about the window. Andre Ayew has been in good form, and I remember speaking to the likes of Tom near the beginning of the season, and it was a big surprise that Andre Ayew and Borja Baston, who's lost his place in the starting 11, that they even stayed. They spent a lot of money on those two players, kind of nigh on $40 million for the two of them. And it seemed like after spending time on loan last season away from the club that they were going to leave. And it was a bit of a massive surprise, really, that they stayed at Swansea. And Andre Ayew has had a good season, a solid season. Not phenomenal, but a good season so far. And inevitably, there's going to be interest from abroad. According to Tom there, though, even if Swansea keep Andre Ayew, he doesn't realistically see Swansea getting promoted. Also, those links with Rian Brewster. He is set to go on loan down into the Championship in January. He's been linked with Leeds, and Swansea's another strong one. As I said, he has a great relationship with Steve Cooper, who was his manager when the England under-17s won the World Cup a few years ago. So that could be a deciding factor, although Tom was indicating there maybe there are other areas that really need some investment, but maybe not. In terms of transfer funds, it may just be loans that they will be looking to do. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us Swansea fans out there, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. So make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon here on the Championship Fan Show. We're going to be talking about Bristol City later in the hour. But up next, we're going to be talking about the side that beat Bristol City at Ashton Gate last weekend. And that is Blackburn.
This is Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in contact, make sure you do. Call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We've been talking about some really interesting topics, actually. Nottingham Forest, that absolute drubbing that they were on the receiving end of last weekend against Sheffield Wednesday, maybe a bit of a worrying sign for Forest. Swansea, we were talking to Tom there about he doesn't quite believe they're good enough to get promoted, even if Andre Ayew stays at the club. So a couple of interesting lines there from Forest and Swansea. We're going to talk about Bristol City slightly later in the hour. They've dropped out of the top six like Nottingham Forest. The side that beat them to knock them out of the top six places as it stands were Blackburn. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Matt Holden, a contributor to the Rovers Chat 1875 podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Matt. As I said, a great win for Blackburn. Ashton Gate is a difficult place to go. They've built a real fortress down there, down in the southwest. Unbeaten run now for Blackburn is now up to 6 matches. You and all the Blackburn fans must have been absolutely delighted with not just the result, but the performance on Saturday.
Certainly was, Kieran. Thanks for having me on again. It was a great performance and a great result. And as you said there, it keeps our unbeaten run going to, 6 fixtures now. And, you know, it's really quite, it's hard to fathom for us Blackburn fans, you know, what the kind of the turnaround has been. Certainly we had a very difficult start to the season. A couple of weeks ago, you know, we were looking at the fans possibly possibly turning on Tony Mowbray in some shape or form. You know, some sections of the support weren't too happy, perhaps wanted a new change of management, but he's certainly made them eat their words, really, in recent weeks, and great wins. Not some good performances, but especially on Saturday with the win at Bristol City was certainly a great victory. And as you said, it's a difficult place to go, Bristol. We've not won there since about 2015. I was just looking back, so it was certainly a great 3 points, and long may it continue.
So a bit of a statement victory for Blackburn Gulls from Bradley Johnson and Adam Armstrong, securing all 3 points for Blackburn. I read Lee Johnson's comments, the Bristol City manager, and he kind of talked about Blackburn controlling the midfield area. We talked about that in any game, at any level, about controlling midfield, and that's a key part of the game. Away from home, that must be a really good sign going forward, that against a good Bristol City side, away from home, Blackburn didn't just get a fluky win. It's not as if Blackburn was so lucky they had an own goal that went their way, or they had a decision that went their way. Blackburn deserved to win this game.
Oh, certainly, yeah. Certainly, from what I saw, we did control that midfield, and we've sort of like played about with our midfield for as far as back as I can remember. You know, we've sometimes had a shaky midfield where, you know, the ball will either bypass them completely both directions, either going forward or you know, when defending. You know, we've just not been able to have that kind of strong midfield. I think with Bradley Johnson in there, Lewis Travis and Blake Corley Evans has been putting in some brilliant performances, you know, to stay in the team. And, you know, as you just said there, it wasn't a fluky win. We certainly did deserve the 3 points, and we controlled the game in such a fashion that, as I said, it's just left some Rovers fans thinking, you know, what's changed? You know, what's been going on at training, or has it been a resumed kind of team confidence? All over the park. But it certainly was a good result and a well deserved 3 points.
Tony Mowbray was without his most influential player, Bradley Dack, and we were talking to a Blackburn guest last week and wondering how Blackburn would be able to deal with that absence. Well, it shows that even without an influential player like that, Blackburn can still get good results.
Yeah, and it was quite a refreshing change not to be too over reliant on Bradley Dack. You know, he has been a kind of a very important player for the side so far this season. I think he's top scorer there as well. So he's certainly been very, very, very influential in our game so far this season. But to pick up 3 points without such an influential player, and to hopefully have him back for the Wigan game on Monday, it certainly will be a great sign that, you know, with or without Dak in the side, we can certainly put in kind of a spirited performance to pick up the points that we need.
As you mentioned, obviously, the game to come against Wigan, we'll talk about that in just a second. Blackburn are now just 1 point off the top six. They are ninth, but actually, because it's so tight, just 1 point off the top six. Are you looking and thinking it's so open that Blackburn, it may not have been an option at the beginning of the season, but you're looking and thinking, actually, a top six place could be available to Blackburn this season?
I'm sure that a couple of pessimistic Rovers fans will be like, you know, we're still not too sure, still not 100%. But when, as you said, when you look at the table and you think, oh yeah, it is so wide open. We're only on 34 points, and the team in what, fourth, Brentford, who we beat the other week, are on 36. You know, and Preston even on 37. It's only really like Leeds and West Brom that are kind of running away with the league at the moment. So it's still very open. I'm hoping that, you know, that this good run does continue for as long as possible. We amass enough points, and that we're able to kind of push for it. I know that this was one of Tony Mowbray's aims for the season, that we'd try and get into that top position and top six positions, and we're going to try our hardest.
And just finally then, looking ahead to Monday night at home against Wigan. Now, I was gonna say, Matt, that this looks like a game that Blackburn should be winning. But what the Championship has told us this season, the moment you think you know what's going to happen next, it goes completely the opposite way. So I'm assuming Blackburn fans aren't going to be presuming anything going into Monday night.
Not at all. I mean, we faced Barnsley not too long ago, actually. I think that was perhaps at the start of our good run at the end of last month, and we only just scraped past them, really. You know, they put up a spirited display, and you know, we won't be taking this for granted. And it is a local game. You know, there's still a bit of kind of banter going on between the fans during our League One campaign a couple of seasons ago. So it certainly won't be taking the game for granted. But I'm pretty sure that, you know, that given the kind of confidence that's flowing through the team at the moment, Wigan are in the relegation zone. So hopefully the lads, with that confidence that they've got, can they get the victory and send us into the Boxing Day game against Birmingham.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Matt. That was Matt Holden, contributor to the Rovers Chat 1875 podcast. Managed to get some good information there. They seem to be able to adapt without Bradley. That must have been the worry for Blackburn fans, despite being on a good run, going into a tough away game at Bristol City. How would they be able to adapt their game without such an influential player that we talk about? Bradley Dack at Blackburn, Jared Bowen at Hull, Carlin Grant at Huddersfield. How do these teams adapt without these players in there? Usually you get kind of that indication of how much someone means to someone. You actually understand that more when they're not available. But Blackburn now 6 games unbeaten. They may be 9th, but they are only a point off the top 6, and actually just 3 points off 3rd. But as it's kind of told us this season, that you'd think on the Monday Night Football, Blackburn will beat Wigan at home. I think trying to predict that is a really difficult art to do in the Championship this season. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, make sure you do. Call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Up next, we're going to be talking about the side that Blackburn beat at the weekend at Ashton Gate, and that was Bristol City.
Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. We've been talking about Blackburn, who beat Bristol City on the weekend. Let's get the Robins' perspective now. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Stanley Hughes from the One Stream in Bristol podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Stanley. So, obviously, we had quite a happy Blackburn fan at that win on the weekend. I'm assuming the weekend was disappointing, or was it just a case of Blackburn turned up, they played well, and just outplayed Bristol City?
That's a tough question, really. I think it's a little bit of that, a little bit of the other one, really. I think a lot of Bristol City fans going into a home double sort of fixture against Millwall and then Blackburn, a lot of City fans are sort of calling for 6 points, or at least sort of, you know, 4 points as a minimum, to sort of come away with 2 defeats and 2 pretty poor performances. You know, we haven't been great at home, but if we'd won one of those games, our home and away records would have been identical this season. But I think there was a lot of disappointed Bristol City fans who were expecting a bit more fight, especially after the disappointing Millwall game.
After the game, two of the big comments that Lee Johnson came out with. The first one, not taking opportunities, not showing a clinical cutting edge in front of goal. Do you think that's down to just simple kind of individual mistakes and not being able to capitalise? Or is it a case of, because of some of the injuries they've had, in particular someone like Benik Afope being ruled out for the season, do you think that that's maybe, that adds to it, the fact that you have injuries up front, that if there were better players who were available that weren't injured, then they would have taken those opportunities?
To some extent, yeah. I think we've sort of, despite him being injured so long ago, we're still lamenting the miss of Benik Afope. But I think there's a little bit Lee Johnson just sort of drumming up the noise around, sort of drumming up noise building ahead to the January transfer window, sort of reminding everyone that the striker he brought in on big money or sort of a marquee signing got injured, and he's reminding everyone, oh, if we had a big striker, you know, give me some money in January, please, Steve Lansdowne. I think that's where he's going with that one. In terms of the actual game, a fair amount of the chances fell to the wrong player, so no insult to Ashley Williams, but you don't really see him as sort of a predatory goal scorer. He had one great chance with a header, one great chance with a shot that he put straight at the keeper. I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, we only had 6 shots. We need to shoot more at home, really. Away from home, we seem to sort of grind out results, and we have great chances. At home, you know, we had the Huddersfield game, but the Millwall and Blackburn games since just haven't been anything in comparison. I mean, he's complaining about sort of, you know, chances not being taken, but we've had Antoine Semenya on the bench for sort of six games now, and despite, you know, games where Jeju and Vyman have been poor or not been up to scratch, he refuses to bring on our young starlet strikers. So I think this is just Johnson drumming up noise ahead of the January transfer window.
He also said that Blackburn controlled the midfield area in the game. Do you think that that's a fair assessment that we talk about in many games of football at any level, that if you're able to dictate play from the centre of midfield, it's going to massively help your cause? Do you think that was one of the key areas why Blackburn won the game and why Bristol City came away with nothing?
I'd say they're probably more industrious. I mean, we've got quite a young midfield as the Championship goes, and Hanno Masengo, who's been sort of our star centre mid in some games, is only 18, and there was one moment where he sort of was a bit soft and challenged, and it led to Blackburn scoring a goal. But in terms of controlling midfield, no, I don't agree. It's quite rare for Bristol City this season to have an immense amount of possession, but we actually had close to 60%, which is really, really rare. Normally we're an out-of-possession team who counters. And I tell you what, it's quite strange. After the game, me and a few of the people I was chatting to were all in agreement that watching Blackburn, it was almost like watching us play away from home. They play in a similar sort of like way, win the ball back in key areas and break in numbers. And they did that time and time again. And I think that's what, in the end, gave them the win.
So Bristol City have dropped out of the top six places. Obviously, it is all very, very close that you take Preston in third on 37 and Swansea in 10th on 34. So just 3 points separating all those sides. We are approaching the halfway mark now in the season. Just one more game until we hit exactly halfway through the season. So where are Bristol City at? Are you thinking, looking at it and thinking the top two are probably in all likelihood to move away? Or are you thinking maybe for a few of those sides in and around the playoff positions that a top two spot isn't completely out of the question?
Oh, I don't know. I think the sort of the average English football fan wants me to say that the top two is still within reach. But looking at the table, I don't know. Even if Leeds do fall apart, we'd really have to turn it on in the last stage of the season. And I haven't quite seen enough to suggest that we can go on the sort of, you know, 14-game unbeaten run that we did last year. I think if we had Benik Afobe fit, I know I'm doing sort of what I have a go at Johnson doing, but I think if we had Benik Afobe still fit, we'd probably be quite close to the top two, or I think we'd be well and firmly in the playoffs. For me, it just comes down to who signs the best players in January. I think that comes down to it. Which striker, sort of third to tenth, which of those teams is going to bring in the best striker or the best midfielder? Because there's always one. You saw it last season when Dwight Gayle went to West Brom and they couldn't quite do it. You saw it with Mitrovic going to Fulham. They paid huge wages. And that essentially, they basically bought promotion with that player. So for me, I think it's which of that sort of top, you know, top three to top ten, which of those teams gets the best striker in January, and hopefully it'll be us.
So looking at the fixtures coming up for Bristol City, obviously it's a very intense period that between in the next 2 weeks, the next 14 days, Bristol City have two away trips, Sheffield Wednesday and Charlton, then two home games against Luton and Brentford. The games are coming thick and fast. Do you think that Bristol City have the squad to get through this period? And is this going to really shape how Bristol City's second half of the season looks like it's going to pan out?
On the second bit of your question, definitely will be a huge, huge barometer of how the rest of the season will pan out. In previous years, normally we do quite well. This is when the Bristol City team starts to click into gear and win games sort of 1-0, 2-1 away from home, just grind out results. In terms of how Bristol City got the squad big enough, yeah, by miles. Our squad is too big. Even Lee Johnson knows this. The problem is whether Lee Johnson will actually use it. I mean, Taylor Moore was arguably our best centre-half in the first third of the season. And against Blackburn, he wasn't even in the squad because you've suddenly got Bailey Wright, Ashley Williams, who came in on a free despite us having four fit centre-backs, Nathan Baker, Thomas Callas, and Taylor Moore is our sort of fifth choice and isn't even in the squad. Centre-mids, we've got far too many. And, you know, Lee Johnson's been accused over the years of not rotating the squad enough. But for the Millwall game, it was three games unchanged. And you could tell it was fatigued. Millwall looked fresher than us. I think that then carried on into the Blackburn game. So I don't think the question is our squad big enough? It is. The question is Lee Johnson brave enough to use the sort of the outskirt players on the squad, the likes of Antoine Semenyo and such? That's the question for me.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Stanley. That was Stanley Hughes from the One Stream in Bristol podcast. A disappointing defeat for them the weekend against Blackburn, but it is all so close. Preston in third on 37 points. You go down to Cardiff in 12th on 32 points. Rather remarkable that you have so few points dividing so many sides.
This is Love Sport.